Welcome to Food and Loathing, your weekly opportunity to eavesdrop on some spirited conversations between a few of Las Vegas' biggest food nerds. I'm your host, Al Mancini, coming to you today from one of my favorite restaurants in Las Vegas, Ada's Food and Wine in Tivoli Village, which until about a week or so ago was known as Ada's Wine Bar, but more on that in just a few minutes. Co-hosting with me today is OffTheStrip.com food writer Samantha Gemini Stevens. Gemini,
hello.
How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Thanks. Yeah. We kind of matched today.
I know. I'm loving it. You've got your Rolling Stones t-shirt on.
You got your Rolling Stones t-shirt on.
Yeah, ish.
Is that a Rolling Stones rainbow LGBTQ t-shirt, or is it just somebody?
Somebody just bought it for me because they know I like rainbow stuff, and it was fun.
And you like tongues sticking out of mouths.
I do. Okay. You know, and it's a little off the shoulders. So I get to show off some tattoos. Stuff. So yeah,
awesome.
Life is good.
Well, you're looking good.
Thanks.
Thank you. And our guest, actually, I should say our guest for this portion, not for the entire episode, but our guest for this portion is the Las Vegas chef who created not only this restaurant that we are sitting in, but also the nearby Al Solito Posto and the Arts District landmark Esther's Kitchen. I can, of course, only be speaking of Chef James Trees. James,
woo-hoo!
Chef, thank you for having us today, and welcome.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We talk about you often enough. You should be here.
You know, I have heard that there is a portion of this podcast that is dedicated towards me,
and I
appreciate that.
You know, we talk about where we eat every week, and it seems like every week somebody who's on the show has eaten in one of your restaurants, which is a testament to just what institutions they've become.
Absolutely.
Here in Las Vegas.
We're very lucky, and thank you guys. And I mean, it really comes down to all the people who are running the restaurants and the teams who are in there, whether it's Keith and George and Dylan downtown, or it's Jackson and Kat here, and then you have Chris and Adam over at Al Solito Posto. I mean, those guys are amazing, and they're all part of a family of restaurants that we really love each other. We support each other. We critique each other. We're honest with each other, and we keep building these things that people want to come to because we only want to be the best at what we do.
Yeah. I get it.
Yeah, well, you're doing a good job, and we're in these places all the time, and yeah, man, and I saw some new menu redesigns over at Al Solito Posto. I think the chicken parm just redid.
I mean, not just the chicken parm. I mean, so basically, after 2.5 years, I've just decided to take all the things and throw them out and start over.
Okay.
Like, that's literally, we've been through a lot of different kind of, like, ebbs and flows at Al Solito, and I think it's time now to kind of kick everyone else's vision out and just be like, this is what I want to do. And I have Adam Rios over there, and I couldn't ask for a better partner with him and Chris Mattson, and now we have Josh Bianchi on as the exec sous.
I saw that.
Awesome.
And Josh is just an amazing creative talent. So
everybody may remember Josh, just because I like to bring people up to date, was his pop-ups last summer he was doing over at the Palms, right? He did a few.
Yep.
And he was at Vegas Test Kitchen.
Yep.
What has he been doing since?
Well, he was with Nina.
Oh, yeah. With Nina Forte. Right.
He did a December residency.
Yeah, a little Osteria kind of vibe, kind of the things that he wanted to cook. And, you know, one of the things with Josh that I really love is, you know, not just the humility, but the ability to take in information and then put it to working towards the goal of making something better. I think one of the things that we love about Josh, and one of the things I love about working with him, is that, you know, he's trying to make things the way I want them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I want you to make food that people want to eat.
Yeah.
Like, that's my main goal. It's not about what I want. It's not about, you know, what, you know, Summerlin wants. It's about what people want to eat. Like, this, like, we can make things that are amazing.
Yeah.
But if they're unapproachable, then they're not going to work.
Right.
So getting him out of, like, that super high-end kind of Vetri vibe that, you know, they're going to do 50 covers a night, and that's great.
Yeah.
We have 240 seats over at Al Solito, and I need standardization, banging it out. Things need to be perfect all the time. You know, that's where him and I are really trying to, like, learn how to work together. And I really love his attitude and his passion and his creativity has really gotten Adam and I to really drive forward what we want to do there. And he's an amazing part of that team. So I just am so lucky to be working with Adam and working with Josh and Chris in the front of the house, busting out the Amaro cart. I've been asking for that Amaro cart for 2 years. I want it.
That hit social media the other day. And I've got a friend coming into town this weekend who also loves all of your stuff.
Right.
And so I texted two different people. And I said, guess where we're going this weekend?
Amaro cart. Do you have any grappa Amaro on that cart?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, we have grappa from Piemonte. And so we have, you know, I think we have one made out of Galera, which is Prosecco grapes. Mm-hmm. And then we also have one made out of Sangio.
So,
we have some really kind of fun, like, little things in there. David Bonatesto, when he was with us, who's an amazing procurer of liquor, was able to get us some really cool gems. And we've held on to those things kind of like up on that rack above.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Like, yeah. So we're taking some of
the beautiful to stare at anyway.
I know, right? It's an amazing thing. I wanna, and me, you know me, I'm like, get up there and get something fun down. Let's drink it, you know?
Yeah. Well, look, James, you know, we're going to be talking to Jackson and Kat about what's going on here at Ada's and about the name change and everything probably in about 15, 20 minutes or so. But as you know, we always kick off the show talking about where we've been eating, what restaurants we've been visiting, kind of giving our little mini reviews so that people can get a feel for, you know, those of us who are out all the time, where we're eating and what's cool and fun and exciting. So how about you? I think a lot of people never really, I mean, knowing what a food writer like myself or Gemini, where we eat is one thing. Half the time it's invitations, media meals, things like that. But a chef who has three restaurants in this town, who has so much going on in his own life, when you get a precious night off from work, I think people would be really interested in knowing where you've eaten recently. So what's going on? What are your most recent restaurant meals, Chef?
You know, it's kind of funny. I don't do a lot of dinners out as much as I do lunches.
Yeah.
Well, that's good to know.
Obviously, I'm a lunch fan.
Yeah, obviously having Steven over at Test Kitchen, my old chef de cuisine, I love going over there and seeing him every single week.
That's for the Jogogis concept in
Exactly.
Test Kitchen.
His ribs he's doing this week are really off the charts good. You had the McRib, I believe.
Yeah.
I got the sandwich version of that a couple weeks ago, and it was just outstanding. And you know, let's see, Bobby did a pop up at a what's the place?
Hard Hat?
Nope, across the street. Oh. At Garagis.
Oh yes.
So I got Bobby, he's one of my servers. He does Stay Tuned Burgers.
Oh yes, Stay Tuned Burgers. I'm going to be talking about that. Okay, let's get into both of those,
because
Jogogi's a little bit of news.
Yeah.
So it's only going to be lunch Mondays through Thursday.
Yep.
I know Stephen Lee just posted that.
Yep.
And he's not going to be doing the Jogogi sushi anymore.
No, I mean, it's like, you know, here's the thing about, like, that people don't really understand about his concept. It is very much American food with the flavors of Korea kind of.
Yeah, I mean, he's been advertising po' boys and all kinds of really
fun things.
Yeah,
I had one of his po' boys. It was really good.
And that's the thing is, like, so when you think of, like, Asian fusion food, this is American fusion food, which is really kind of interesting for what he's doing. I mean, his Calbee smash burger is ridiculously good. So those kind of fun things. And then, you know, and Bobby has been a server with me for about 2 years over at Esther's. And, you know, one of the things with, you know, with our wonderful friends from Winnie and Ethel's, you know, those are my, you know, my sous chef, Aaron, who was with me for a few years, and his sous chef is Nick, who's one of our cooks at Esther's. And, you know, and then you have Steven, who's moved on, and, like, all these people are going out and they're opening their own things. And I think what we're doing is we're empowering these guys to believe in themselves, because if I can do it and they see how dumb I am, man, then they're so much smarter. They can go out and do these things. And that's where, like, Bobby, like, started with the passion of, you know, I just want to do a smash burger. I don't want to do anything else. Like, we had to convince him to put tater tots on his menu.
Oh, man.
Like that's, like, he wants to be a purist. I mean, you're talking about a guy who grinds all his own beef, and at the end of the event, he throws it away.
Wow.
He's not saving it or doing anything else. There's no
chili. No, he wants it to be the quality. If you go in, you're getting what's good. Well, I'll tell you, we went in there, and this was I had for my section later, but I'll talk about it. I went back into a Vegas Test Kitchen this past weekend. Jogogi's was not there. We got there a little early. They started sushi a little later in the day. We did the pizza, which was really good. And by the way, Salamente pizza, I believe
they're
calling it. Yeah. Ethan's doing really weird crusts and dough over
it's
there.
So fun.
And he told me it was, like, the most hydrated that he had ever made, but it's the naturally leavened crust. So, yeah, it was really fun crust. You should definitely check that out. But and we ordered the Irish one because it was St. Patrick's Day, but they're like, no, yeah, I also have to get a margarita, which is always what happens. I never order the signature item, so they always send me the signature item anyway, right? Yeah. So that pizza was great, but for Stay Tuned Burgers, Sue saw that they had a grilled cheese on the menu, and she was craving a grilled cheese. And this thing came out, and this looks like, interestingly, I had just heard some DJs talking about how they used to like to go to McDonald's and order the cheeseburger with nothing but the cheese, right? This looks like a McDonald's cheeseburger. If all you had on it was the cheese, right? It's skinny as fuck. It looked, you're like, what the hell's going on with this? It's got the griddle marks on it, all that shit. And Sue loved that grilled cheese.
Yeah.
But of course they sent over a burger, right?
Yeah.
And now this is why I'm gaining back all my weight that I lost while I was sick, because people just send me all this extra food. But I have to tell you, I would never have ordered that burger out. That burger, I was trying to put it into words, and Sue and I were bouncing it around. That burger reminds me of everything good I remember a Whopper tasting like when I was younger.
Oh, wow.
And none of the bad that convinced me never to go into a Burger King for the past 15 years of my life, right? That was a flashback memories of an idealized version of a Whopper without any of the fast food shit going on.
So, I mean, the other places that I've been over the last week, I mean, so I snuck into Weirutai. I only go to the original location on Sahara.
On Sahara, yeah.
The Nam Khao Todd, the Khao Soi, and they used to do duck soup, and I always ask them if they'll do the duck soup, and like maybe one out of every five times I go, they'll make it for
so
me.
So you're saying there's a chance.
If you're James Trees, that's true.
If you ask, you may get it, but most likely if they're not having it for lunch, you're not having it. And then the other burger that, you know, that jumps out of mind that like I got to go have was a Pit Stop burger.
I don't know, like, one.
So Pit Stop has been open for probably 25 years.
We've all got these question marks over our head.
It's in Boulder City, and it's just a burger spot. They do a burger. You can get it with American cheese. You can get it with bacon. And they do, like, you know, little side things, fries, stuff like that. Yeah. They do the burger sauce and that kind of stuff. Very, very straightforward. I will say this, it is worth the drive to go to Boulder City get that burger.
And there's also, doesn't Boulder City have a beer festival coming up?
They do.
For anybody who may be heading
out
to that,
as a matter
good to know.
Yeah. This Saturday, March 25th.
Because you can only eat at the Dillinger how many times, right? Like we all eat there every time we go to Boulder City. But.
No, I mean the Cup Cafe, the coffee cup. For me, it's the coffee cup and the Pit Stop.
I love the Southwest Diner. I'm telling you, their Bloody Marys and their sort of typical American breakfasts are also worth it.
I don't know. Like, I've been having crushes on the girls who work at the coffee cup since I was 16 years old. So, I mean, like, I don't know how they all have changed it out. They're probably their daughters and everything else.
Right.
Like, I was going to say, it's the same girls that have gotten old with you but
they're
no.
They're always, like, 19 and tattooed, and I'm just like... Yes.
Don't you love it that look is that thing that everything that I thought was attractive in the 90s, but only like you had to go to New York City to see girls that looked like that, are now like just everywhere. And God bless America.
Yes.
God bless
America. But yeah, no. So
yay
the
for tattooed
stop,
women.
I mean, the Pit Stop, always get the double, you know, American cheese, add bacon. You don't need anything else. I mean.
I'm writing this down.
I know. You're taking copious notes over there.
That's
like,
no,
I want to eat everywhere at James's.
Yeah, and that's the thing is like that's been my go-to burger in Vegas for forever.
Oh, I love it.
Cool.
So big win over there. And then just that and Wira and Jagogi's, and that's where I've been.
Awesome.
Well, thank you for sharing,
Chef.
Yeah, appreciate you guys.
Gemini, what about you? Where have you been eating?
Oof. Well, I mean, another one that has been getting a lot of airtime just because I've been eating there so much is Shanghai Taste. our Please Send Noodles with 3 exclamation points on Facebook. Don't forget that. We've talked about that on this show before.
Please Send Noodles. Quick reminder. It's a cookbook cooking club.
Yes. Cookbook cooking club. Anybody is welcome to join us. You don't have to be in Vegas. We pick a book, sometimes 2 every month or so, and we study it. We cook from it. We chat about how our recipes are going, how it worked for somebody else.
James had a question.
Are you going to do Katie's new book? Katie Parla's new book?
I need this book.
Oh my gosh.
Okay.
All right. So Katie Parla, you know, she writes for the New York Times. She writes about Rome. She's been kind of like studying all these other places, Istanbul. But she just released a book. I think she's on her book tour right now.
Okay.
It's Food of the Italian Islands.
Ooh.
It is an amazing cookbook. It's not a good cookbook. It's not like, oh, that's an interesting thing. Like, it's an amazing cookbook. Her last cookbook that she did, I remember going to Ikerti at the base of Vesuvius, like when we were in Naples, and we're like talking, blah, blah, blah. They're like, oh, Katie, you know, texted, like, you're here. I was like, really? And they're like, yeah, we're in the book. And they come out at Ikerti with the book.
Oh my
and
God.
They like show us, like, this is us. Awesome. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so cool. But she's an amazing ambassador for Italy. She's one of the best voices about when it comes to regional Italian food.
Yeah.
But like there's a recipe in there that I've been doing for a long time, which is fregola and clams, which is from Sardinia.
Yep.
And let me tell you, I know Kim would lose her mind over this book. She will
I know
love
she's going to listen to this, so I'll just tell her I'm buying the book and I'll bring it on Monday.
You Shout out to Kim Foster, the leader of Please Send Noodles.
She is.
So where did you Please Send Noodles, folks?
So well, we started out at SF Market. There's two SF Markets on Spring Mountain. We went to the one at Decatur in Spring Mountain, and we did a little shopping for Asian ingredients because our current book is The Wok by J. Kenzie Alt Lopez, or Lopez Alt, sorry. And some people have no idea what to do when they see some of those ingredients. So some of us who have done a little bit more of that kind of cooking grabbed some others, went shopping. And then because it's literally 0.4 miles or something away, we went to Shanghai. Joe happened to be there. Chef Jimmy was there. There were 16 of us. We took over this long table in the back. And if you've been there, you know it's not a huge place.
But James Beard long listed, right?
James Beard long listed. Yep, this he year, is on yes. that list. And yeah, so one of the girls was super excited. She started ordering things. And next thing you know, everything came out. So, I mean, every dumpling you can think of, from the vegan to the crab yolk soup dumplings. We even had banana Nutella dumplings for dessert. In between, a few noodle dishes, wontons and chili sauce, bok choy, the duck and the ox tongue are done beautifully. Two different dishes. Definitely try them. Even if you're a little skeptical, it just tastes wonderful. So we got... The list is long, so let's just say it was an amazing meal. Some people had never had some of these dishes before, so it was really exciting to see people try new things. Dishes were being passed, hands were flying across the table, copious amounts of tea were drunk. It was the perfect afternoon.
Awesome.
For all of us. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
My two favorite dishes there are the cow foo and the sticky ribs.
Yes.
Yeah, the cow foo. Because
I have not had either of those there.
Braised wheat gluten.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the most delicious dish sponge you've ever eaten in your life.
Yeah. Cool. It really is that is. The one they call the rice cake dish?
No.
Oh,
no,
okay.
That's a Korean
okay,
thing, actually.
Okay, because we had
Taiwanese.
That, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But the cow foo is the one that's like, it looks like pieces of dish sponge.
Yes,
but
yes.
It's actually just gluten that they braise in sweet soy and star anise.
Uh-huh.
It is so good.
Oh, okay. Star anise.
Going deep into the menu there, because the rest of us just order the Xiaolongbao and we're happy, right?
Right? And then you're done.
James goes deep.
We had plenty of carnivores there. We had vegans there. Everybody got something. And the service was impeccable. Shout out to server Kevin, because we had him running like a chicken with his head cut off. And he deserved every little bit of what we left him at the end.
Cool.
Went to Echo and Rig at the District.
Yes.
I'd only been to an immediate event before, so this time I actually got to sit down and have lunch with some of my Chefs for Kids dinner committee ladies. And, one girl ordered the burger that looked amazing. I have to tell, I didn't know this about that their burgers until then. It's not always the same burger. They start with a certain amount of prime beef that they're grinding down, and they've got their seasonings and things like that. But then the rest of the burgers every day could be different because they use pieces from the butcher shop,
whatever
from
scraps
taking
they have.
Cuts and scraps and things like that. So every day the burger could be different. It could
so
have
funny.
Creekstone Farms. It could have grass fed. It could have Wagyu. So it was really cool.
And that's how
that.
A good gourmet burger should be made from the scraps. I'll never forget the time that I guess I could tell this story now.
Please.
I think all the restaurants are closed, but I was in I was in Atlantic City and I was hanging out with some people from the MENA group. I think they had a Sea Blue there, which I love Sea Blue. And they put a burger
BJ
on the
was
menu.
The chef.
And was it?
Yeah, BJ, the guy who was the chef, is amazing.
Well, I was hanging out with Dave Varley there, right, at the time. And he's like, you got to try the burger. And the burger was fantastic. And I'm like, why is this burger so good? He's like, well, we get Bobby Flay's scraps from his steakhouse next door.
You know, Dave was with us at Bradley Ogden. And everyone always wanted to know what the secret to the Bradley Ogden burger was.
Yeah.
Was the fact that it was all the trim from our ribeyes.
Yes.
And all of our foie gras scraps.
Oh man.
No, we didn't always tell people this, but like literally it was probably 70-30.
Yeah.
The fat to meat ratio.
Oh man.
Like that was when you could serve it so simply because of the dry age that we were getting, and then also the combination, that flavor, the ribeye cap and some of the fat,
oh,
and then
God.
All that like little bits of foie gras, we would just chop it up and throw it into the mix.
That was a hell
God.
Of a burger.
Yeah,
I've got a lobe in my freezer. I think I might have to go.
Yeah, why, you were asking for like pieces. I'm like, go to MGP.
Well, because
like, why?
With the pieces, I made foie gras ganache that my girlfriend calls foie my God. And I like the offcuts for that because, A, it's usually a little bit cheaper because I want to save the nice slices or a whole lobe when I'm actually going to be searing it off nicely. But I did get my pieces.
I mean,
so.
You know, when we were at Mina Group, I remember... the whole roasted foie gras.
Oh.
That was one of the signature items.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that in a while, right?
No.
I don't think I've seen that anywhere since I saw that on a Mina menu.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I love bringing back the classic.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's do it. I'm in.
Other than the burger at Echo and Ring, let's get back on track because this is going to be a three-hour podcast.
I know, man. I'm pulling it back. Yeah, so I had, because you talked about it the other day, I got the terrine.
Oh, yes.
Super thin, crispy on the outside, this beautiful sort of carnitas,
like a pig's
super
head
tender
terrine.
In the middle. Yeah,
pig's ears, pig's head, right.
And the outside was crisp, it was seasoned well, it wasn't too thick, cut beautifully just with a fork, ate the entire plate, that was my meal, and then some salad and things.
Yum.
We shared some pretty standard Echo and Rig basics, but they're standard because they're beautiful, like the portobello fries and the calamari. Somebody else got one of the salads with a beautiful buttermilk dressing. And our mutual friend Rachel got the drunken goat sandwich with this impossibly thin bread with like fruit and nuts in it. And it was layered with cheese and all kinds of fresh veg. Absolutely beautiful. So definitely get over there.
Echo and Rig in the district.
Echo and Rig in the district of Green Valley.
The old Elephant Bar space, if
yes,
you're looking for
exactly.
it.
Yes, exactly. Looks so much different. I love it. Let's see. And then, I try to keep things positive, but I got to share this. On Sunday, a girlfriend really wanted to go to Laria. It's at the base of the Panorama Towers.
Okay.
It was Master Chef Sean McLean's place for all of 2 months. And the owners decided to go a different direction almost as soon as they opened.
Yeah, I remember the blind pig
and
in there.
The blind pig used to be in there, yeah. And, you know, I just got to say, it was eh.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, the Hollandaise was bland. Everything that should be crispy kind of wasn't. The service was super slow. We were the only three people in there for the first couple of hours at opening.
So is it more just an amenity for the people that live or vacation in the
Panorama
Towers? It sounds
like it because there was a bunch of people that came in and took over the bar at some point. They all seem to know each other. They all seem to be, you know, so my friend is basically house sitting in the high rise at the moment. And so she's seen these people before. She's always had great service sitting at the bar. Maybe I need to go give that a chance. But I just don't think that I'd be driving over there. I mean, we tried a bunch of different things. I did get a burger, not nearly as lovely description as all these other burgers we're talking about today. I think I want to give it another try, but just not
just
excited.
Just not doing it for
no.
you. Okay,
and
that
I
happens.
I really wanted to like it, but just not this time. So
cool. Any place else, or are we moving on to me?
Let's move on to you.
Let's move on to me. I'm going to try to rock this out rather quickly because I've done a lot. I'm bouncing back, baby. I'm trying to eat as many places as I can. I attended a collaborative beer pairing dinner at Trustworthy Brewing in the Palazzo. It had a special menu created to complement the beers of both Trustworthy and Huddle Brewing. So it was a lot of fun. There's not much to really talk about with regard to the food since most of it was only available that one night.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm mentioning it because I was really psyched to see Trustworthy, which was born in California and located in a strip casino, working hand hand in hand with the Las Vegas Arts District original Huddle. So thanks. Yep. You know, it's cool to see that community spirit. Yeah. I wanted to send a shout out to them and thank them for the invitation. I also dropped by Rosina on my way out of that dinner in the Palazzo.
Yep.
And I've got to say, it's the most intimate and by far my favorite of the three lounges within the Venetian's Cocktail Collective.
Yep.
I love it. It's got a great Art Deco decor, really elegant vibe. I know I realize people are going to think that glam rock feel over at Electra is more my thing, that kind of David Bowie thing they got going on at Electra, and I do like that, but
you're a Renaissance man.
I am, and also the Dorsey is much larger, and it's also a great place, but for me, it's all about Rosina, so
okay.
Heads, shout out to those guys. I also attended the grand opening party for the new Rouge Room in the Red Rock Resort. This is the space that was once Cherry and was later used for a series of pop-up bars. They had a Golden Knights pop-up bar in there. They had Christmas pop-up bars with elves and all kinds of shit. So it is now being run by the Wish You Were Here group. Those are the same folks behind Cassie Beach Club in the Virgin.
Okay.
And I happen to love the food at Cassie Beach Club.
I really
love everything about
Cassie.
It.
Yep.
So we didn't get to eat a lot at this. There was a lot being passed around, and I didn't get any of it because I was taking videos and doing all the shit that you do when you're working a media night. But they had live jazz as well as a DJ, super sexy vibe, a private pool. Just a totally cool attempt, I think, to take this sort of supper club vibe that's been all the rage on the strip for so long, and the speakeasies and the supper clubs and the live music, and really do an elegant version of it out in the burbs, because nobody's really done it out in the burbs.
Not really.
You need a serious budget to do it right, otherwise it just looks kind of cheap and half-assed, which is a different kind of speakeasy that I also like. So these guys put in the money, and they've got Station as their partners, and they're doing a good job with it. So I do, I want to go back because I like Cassie so much. I want to go back and check out the vibe.
And when are they open?
They are open weekends only.
Okay.
I think it's it might be Thursday through Sunday. It's definitely Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And the pool, the same thing during the day. They're only open at night, and then the pools are open during the day. Limited days.
You know, it's something about the Delilahs, the Mayfair Supper Clubs. You guys have to understand that the original versions of these, like the original Delilah in L.A., is like a dive bar with some food. Right, in a stage. Like,
right.
It's not the amazing, over-the-top Las Vegas production.
Oh, yeah. I remember the first time I walked in there.
And the Houston Brothers, they do really good bars. They do really good small bars. This is something completely that is Las Vegas. So when you go to L.A., try to go to the original Delilah.
Okay.
I hate to say go to L.A. for something original.
Right.
But, go to L.A. and go to the original Delilah, and you'll see, they're taking stuff from Vegas that Josh is doing here and trying to bring it back and bring it into the fold of LA because it's so good what he does.
Yeah.
And they're really good at bars. He's really good at food. So getting a little bit of the Vegas vibe into the LA vibe would be good for the food over there.
Okay.
But we definitely need the less choreographed, less set up kind of vibe that those supper clubs have in LA.
Okay.
We need more of that here. It needs to be toned down. We don't need Cirque performers in every damn restaurant. You don't need that.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see what Rouge Room does, man. Maybe it'll be because it's in the burbs. But, it is still pretty fucking elegant. It has a private pool and cabanas out back. So it's
I need
not
to get
really...
my happy ass over there. I saw all the photos. I couldn't make it over for a couple of things. But, it just looks so nice.
So prior to the official opening of Chris Santos's new Stanton Social Prime in Caesar's Palace, which we will tell you about during the news section, you'll hear from Chef Santos during that section, but I attended the media dinner in the restaurant's PDR, and man, I feel like Chris served us more than half of that menu. So so standouts, So the standout, and I'm a huge fan of Beauty and Essex. I love Beauty and Essex a lot. So I was really excited to see what he was doing. Standout dishes: a steak tartare served over a cheese quesadilla, really mixing the hot and the cold there. I dug that quite a bit. Also, the carpaccio, which was drizzled in a warm brown butter, was really awesome. The crispy pierogies, very different than the Martha Stewart pierogies that I had recently.
Oh, right.
And as a guy who used to, when I was a kid, I made pierogies with my mom.
Exactly.
I'm excited when anybody puts pierogies on a menu. So bravo to Chris for bringing them in. I also had my first butter board.
Oh,
and
God.
That was honestly only interesting to me because the butter came out smoked under glass. So there was a lot of smoke in the butter. So at least they did something with a trend that I cared nothing about. It gave it a really unique taste. There weren't a lot of misses in my book. I'd say the dirty tots topped with caviar. It seemed to be trying a bit too hard for me personally. And while the signature French onion soup dumplings were okay, I mean, they were okay. They were good. I'll give you they were good. But I actually prefer the grilled cheese and tomato soup dumplings at Beauty in Essex. So, hey, have them both side by side. Let me know whether you agree with me on that one. Finally, oh, also, I guess the big standout dish was with the T-bone that they hang there and then they light it on fire in front of you tableside.
Yeah.
So they got all that shit going on. It's definitely a clubby scene, and Chris will talk a bit about that later. I also have to send a shout out and mad props to the pastry team on some truly decadent desserts. A key lime pie with massive amount of meringue on top, a really amazing chocolate peanut butter cake, and a strawberry milkshake that was actually looks like it was from that show Is It Fucking Cake?
Because
then
I
you
love
cut
that
into
show.
It and it was cake. You know, that's not the real name of the show, people. It's just called Is It Cake?
Yeah.
But to me, it's Is It Fucking
Cake? Is It Fucking Cake?
So it was great. So, you know, it's always cool. I like Chris Santos. I like his food a lot. So we'll hear more from him in the news section.
He was my judge on Chopped.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I still haven't seen my show. I've never seen the show, but man, he was so cool.
I'm going to have to go back and check that one out,
right?
Man.
I lost.
Viewing party.
Oh, well, that's not right, but that's okay.
No, no, it's totally. I should have probably seen the show before I went on it.
No, man, it's more fun if you don't. Go in
right?
blind.
Dude, yeah, they were like trying to explain the show to me, and I was like, so what goes on here? They're like, we're 23 seasons in. You don't know.
You never saw the fucking show?
I was like, no, man. Sorry, I don't watch food
now
TV.
Now I'm definitely looking this
How
one up.
How punk are you, man? You're like...
I was...
It's your Johnny Rotten
right?
No, I
TV
wish.
Appearance,
yeah, that was,
man.
That was my one, yeah.
I paid a couple of visits to Chinglish over the past week or
yeah.
so. Food-wise, I stuck to some familiar dishes. The prawn fried rice that I love. The pork bao's great. Those delicious po-po's dumplings. I've spoken about all of them before. Not much new to add. But what is new is the cocktail menu. And I actually spoke to Ken Heck about that, starting with some of his friends who helped him and his wife Kitty create the new offerings.
Well, we'd had the same cocktail menu for the last 2 years, and it was time for a change. And so we talked to our guests and we found what were the ones that we couldn't get rid of. The things that if you get rid of, they're going to revolt. So we kept two or three from the old menu. But other than that, we had space. So we called our friends who are some of the best mixologists all over the city. And we invited 9 different booze nerds to come together. And we fed them the entire food menu, starters, entrees, sides, everything, even desserts. And we challenged them to come up with at least one cocktail each that really complements and showcases our food. Because no matter how great our bar is, and I really do think it's one of the best bars in the city, Dad's Food is always the star here.
Okay, so what were the results? What should people expect when they come in here?
Well, you can imagine a bunch of booze nerds. They all started with things like bourbon and Fernet. But... you know, we reminded them that we do have to have some diversity. So we ended up with a really cool passion fruit cocktail with gin, which was a real surprise. And we didn't think it was going to be as good as it was. It's really amazing. It's called the Causeway Sunrise. And it's got some passion fruit puree. It's got some gin, a little bit of anise in it, a little black licorice. It's an amazing cocktail. And I would have never, ever thought that it would have gone so well with our food. But it is absolutely amazing with our Portuguese fried rice. And then we have other things like there's a bourbon heavy drink called the Handover. It's slightly bittersweet. And it's got Buffalo Trace bourbon. It's got some lime, some ginger, and a lot of bitters over the top.
So the bartenders that you worked with, the mixologists that came in to help you with this, were they people who were familiar creating cocktails for a Cantonese restaurant?
That's a great question. No. No, I really... one or two of them were. There were two or three that work with us, one that used to work with us. But the rest of them... they'd just been in and seen our cocktails and really thought it was on point and thought that they wanted to be a part of the program. And actually, that's kind of a cool thing that we did is anyone whose cocktail won out, we put them right on the menu with their name. So on the menu, it says Gary S., Daniel D., Michael P., Matt K., these names are all Jeffrey B., who's in Costa Rica. But we put all of these people on there. I will say the most entertaining part of this was when I demanded a coffee or espresso martini. The lineup was six cocktails long, and each one of them looked and tasted completely different. It was really amazing. And I'm really proud of Mac. Mac Kupchick is one of our in-house bartenders who came up with the winner called the Night Market Coffee Martini. And it is an absolute masterpiece of a coffee martini, tequila based.
Cool. So what's the price range on these, and when can people get them?
Well, they're available now, and the prices go anywhere from $12 to $19 a cocktail, depending on which one you go for. We try to keep them reasonably priced, but we are a craft cocktail bar, so all of the syrups and all the juices and everything is made in-house. So, you know, it's not a Jack and Coke bar, if you know what I mean.
And over the weekend, I paid another visit to Vegas Test Kitchen. We talked about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think once we get that, yeah, we did the Vegas Test Kitchens. I think we're good, so I think it's about time to mix things up after this break. And we got news coming up shortly, but we're going to be talking first to Kat and Jackson here at Ada's and talk about the name change and all that fun stuff. Stay tuned. This is Food and Loathing.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends, so for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Lauren, we are sisters.
That's true.
And we host a celebrity-obsessed podcast called Pop Apologists.
We also love Taylor Swift. Chandler, how are you managing to cope while we await Taylor's new album?
Look, I want to be put into a medically induced coma and wake up on April 19th, but I'm not sure my insurance is going to cover it. Join us on our pop culture podcast, Pop Apologists, where we will be dishing on all things celebrity news and deep diving every word and note of Taylor's new album. Pop Apologists. Pop Apologists.
Here you are in Vegas, you're hungry, and the choices are endless. But do you really want to trust the crowd? You can trust Neon Feast. Restaurant recommendations from real food pros sharing where they send friends and family. All that knowledge is just a download away on the Neon Feast app. You want the strip, off strip, downtown, great views, great value? Find smart, informed restaurant recommendations on the Neon Feast app and neonfeast.com.
And joining us for this segment now, of course, Gemini's still with us.
Hi.
James Trees has left. But we have Chef Jackson Stamper and sommelier Kathleen Thomas, or as everybody just calls her here, Kat the Wine Goddess.
That's right.
How are you?
Doing well. Doing great.
Yeah. I know the health inspector's just left. That must have been fun. I bring the health inspectors with me when
Apparently.
You brought the good times.
Yeah, that's it, man. I think they just follow me around because I look dirty. I don't know. I think they're worried.
They're like, oh, he's going to eat there. We have to check.
So, guys, there's so much I want to talk about, and I was just in here dining again this past weekend. I had some great dishes off your new brunch menu, and we're going to get to that. But let's talk what's in a name. Because this place had been known as Ada's Wine Bar for a very long time, and it's now Ada's Food and Wine. So anybody want to jump in as to why the decision? Kat, do you feel bad? I mean, you are the wine goddess, and now they've demoted you. You're behind food in the name. I hope there's no drama associated with that.
I'm a tiny giant, so I think it was a very collaborative thought process, and I'm glad that Chef Jackson was able to vocalize this to the powers that be, because we've never not focused on great food.
Yep.
And I think it was a really cool and exciting way for me to get the wine aspect out there, but food was always a high priority here. So
yeah, I mean, I will say that I don't drink very much. I rarely drink, and I don't drink wine when I do drink. So, and yet this is one of my absolute favorite restaurants in all
Absolutely.
Of Las Vegas. So I think when you see Ada's Wine Bar, you know, there's a temptation to say, I'm not a wine person, right? And of course you could go, well, everybody's a wine person. Kat's amazing. She'll find you something you like,
which
I've said
true.
A million times, right? But the truth of the matter is, and it's all about, you know, Jackson, for me, because I'm not a drinker anymore, Jackson, it's all about your food and the creative and simultaneously creative and exciting and wild and weird, but yet comforting and welcoming dishes that you do that have made this one of my absolute favorite restaurants. I mean, it's a short list for me, you know, of places that I'm in love with at any given time. There's like right now Anima, you mm-hmm. guys, places where I know that I can go in and be comforted by the selections, or you'll be willing to take me out of my comfort zone with dishes that I don't think I'm going to dig, but then I order them because I trust you and they're always fucking amazing.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. High praise.
I'll even eat your beet dishes, and I hate beet dishes. And there's a pear salad, which I would never order, a grilled pear salad.
Oh,
I remember
so
loving
good.
When you did it. So what, do you feel like you were kind of getting, the food was being overshadowed for a while by the name?
I don't think it was being overshadowed. I think when we were coming out of the pandemic and James, Kat, and I were all conceptualizing this place, I believe that there was a higher emphasis on the wine. I think that's what we wanted to be. We wanted to start with a very kind of small concept and have the idea of a wine bar with a small food menu, but really cool food.
Yep.
And easily kind of executable with a very small staff. So, you know, we were only open 5 days a week. We were only open from 2 to 9, sometimes 2 to 8. So it was very small staff, myself, one other cook, Kat, a couple other somms, and that was really it.
Yeah.
We ran everything ourselves. Our menu was probably only 8. Maybe 6 food items.
So it really were felt, one of them.
Yeah. So it really felt more at that time like a wine bar with some cool food options.
Yeah.
And that was it. The food was kind of there to keep you in the place and keep you drinking and enjoying your mm-hmm. wine, and to pair with wines and make things a little bit more fun. But as we grew and evolved, the menu kept growing, the staff kept growing, and it just feels like it got to a point where I was just like, I think we're a restaurant.
So it's about time to call us a restaurant.
So, and that was kind of what we all sat and talked about, and we all just agreed, like, yeah, I think we are. So I think maybe the name should reflect it, so that when people look us up, they think more in that direction, as opposed to like, oh, this is a stopover maybe before or after your dinner.
Right.
No, this is a place you can come and just have dinner.
So if I can throw out there, you know, I have sat down with you guys recently, and that was one of the things that Kat and I talked about was, you know, you guys are unique in the fact that you are a wine bar, that it's more than just maybe a charcuterie plate or something. And this isn't on anybody else in Vegas, but especially on this side of town, there's not a whole lot going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the issue came up with, when somebody is looking for something around here, if you don't tell them that food is involved, they may skip over you completely because they don't understand that you've had a fantastic food program for so long.
Right.
So adding food to the title just kind of seemed like a natural thing.
Yeah, we felt it was just a natural progression.
Yeah.
For
but
what
it
we've
is,
been doing.
It's such a chef-driven establishment, and there's so much of you. And I want to talk a bit about your background, because
okay.
you know, I met you when you were at the Kitchen at Atomic,
yeah.
and we'll talk a bit about that in a second. But you come from New York City.
Yes.
Where talk about your time in New York City and where you were cooking there very briefly, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no problem. So the majority of my time in New York City was spent cooking at a place called Employees Only. It's a very, very popular cocktail bar. It's known more as a bar, but it has a full restaurant attached to it, and we were very proud of our food program that we did there. So I was there for like 5 or 6 years. I worked under an incredible chef named Julia Jokshik, who left to open her own places in Nashville, Tennessee. And then before that, I worked at a place called La Pulperia, which is still there in Hell's Kitchen. It's a kind of South American-based cuisine. Mm-hmm. And he was a chef, Chef Carlos Barros, that I had worked with for many years between Philadelphia and the Jersey Shore. And then he opened the spot in New York, and that's actually why I moved to New York. So that's kind of the places that I worked at.
And then you came to Vegas, and I met you at the Kitchen at Atomic. Kitchen at Atomic, for those who don't know, was a short-lived experiment, I guess, with whether that end of Fremont Street down near Atomic Liquors was ready for a higher level of food than bar food. And Vegas Test Kitchen hadn't been there yet, nope. I don't believe. Natalie Young had tried to do Chow down there. It didn't really do all that well. And one of my favorite now former Las Vegas chefs, Justin Kingsley Hall, yep. had developed the original menu in there. You came in after him, and it always felt like a restaurant where the chefs, yourself and Justin, were both trying to create a restaurant, and everybody just wanted sloppy bar food, and they wanted it because Atomic is I would call it a dive bar. I mean, to me, it's a glorious dive
bar. It's a
glorious dive bar.
We both did. I think when we first met in the interview, we both were like, yeah, we consider it a dive bar.
I would absolutely call that a dive bar, yeah.
So that sadly did not work out. What did you learn, and what did you think about your time there?
I learned a lot about Las Vegas while I was there, and I met a lot of fantastic people. I met my sous chef, who still works with me here. I've met a bunch of other people that are now involved in Vegas Tech's Kitchen, of other various places downtown. So using it as a springboard for networking was incredible. It just got my foot in the door and really just introduced me to the city as a food city. And it also just, you know, introduced me to some of the differences of Las Vegas to other places.
Right.
Like we don't all live on the Strip or work in casinos or.
yeah. And also just the neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Where what places are known for, what neighborhoods are known for what, mm-hmm. Where people tend to go for what experience, those types of things.
And then you got in with Chef James Trees, and I guess, you know, this place is so interesting because it is not Italian, as his other two restaurants are. And I tend to call it this is always a problem, like especially on Neon Feast,
sure.
right? Like what categories do I put my most creative favorite restaurants into, right? Because, you know, I put you guys in with Spanish and tapas because that seems to be your primary focus. But is that still the primary focus here?
No, that was when we first started opening. Mm-hmm. Definitely Spanish and Mediterranean small plates was the idea. I think we've started to gear a little bit more toward, I would call it new American, but that's such a, you guys know, that's such a broad, overarching term. You can almost do anything under New American.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what we do. We bounce around a lot. We talked about this the other day.
We did.
Jim and I, where the menu always tends to make sense, but there is a lot of different influences going on at the same time. But I try to always have some cohesion to it, whether the cohesion is that, like, oh, we're going to focus on Mediterranean this time, we're going to focus on Northeastern, Mid-Atlantic,
right,
West Coast.
So it's kind of, in many ways, this is a test kitchen, I feel like. Mm-hmm. Like, where a lot of ideas are being bounced around, and some that we may see at other James Trees restaurants. And, you know, there's certainly a lot of give and take. It just makes it really hard to classify and then to recommend to people.
Yeah.
The wine, of course, always a key feature here and has been from day one.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
Maybe not day one of Ada's, because there used to be a lot of gin in here in the very early days.
Oh, in the first generation
Ada's, it was pizza, ice cream,
and gin.
But
yep.
It is, for a long time, been very wine-focused. So, Kat, what do you try to do when you're curating the wine selection here? What's your focus? What kind of customer are you aiming it towards?
All of them.
Yeah. Anybody that wants to drink.
I think, you know, with my time that I spent on the Strip for so many years.
I guess I should have asked your background. So before we start that, why don't you give us a little bit about your background? And
I'm
we'll
from some planet where there's a lot of loud, angry, tiny people. I actually very, very gratefully was part of the opening team at Bellagio. and I was in banquets there, but I was wowed by the wine team and the beverage team. So I was mentored by a sommelier, the wine director at the time, who then kind of helped me go over to open Aria. And I worked for Sean McClain, Open Sage, which in my heart forever.
Miss that restaurant so
me
much.
Me too. But all of those things helped me. I was watching, and I wasn't into the wine programming yet, but I was watching all of these great aspects of, you know, what is possible and what gets people excited. And then over the years, I started to hone in on what made me excitable, and that was learning about new regions and trying new things. And I figured, well, why not give people an opportunity to do that here? So we have some lesser, I would say, noticeable names that are always on your Instagram posts and your social medias being those wow wines. But we wow people with the juice that we put out. And it's really the excitement of my team, including the chef team. They get to really come and taste wines and help choose things. But it's the excitement, I think, that we get that we share with the other people. And sometimes not everybody's going to like what we choose. And then we listen to them and we find something new. So right. it is a test place in every which way. It's awesome.
It strikes me, again, as somebody who doesn't order a lot of wine. You know, my wife comes in, you always find something that Sue likes, and you always remember what she liked, which is fantastic. So
I don't know how I do
here,
it. I can't remember anything and about me, but...
Everybody on your team remembers, too, what she had last time she was in here. So I don't know if you guys just have a great note system in the back or what, but whatever it is, it works. But it strikes me that this is not a overly expensive place to drink wine, as so many wine bars can be, that you can come in here and get some serious value for your selection. I mean, what's the general price range in your wines by the glass, and how many wines by the glass do you offer?
Average price, I mean, we do go below this, but I'd say is $15 for wines by the glass. Our average bottle price is about $60. And of course, we can go up and can go below that as well. For me, again, it was all of that time being in the glitz and glamour and just seeing the pricing structure that was so rigid in some of the restaurants that I'm fortunate that, you know, Chef James allows me so far to have more of a sliding sort of scale on pricing where I can play around with it and not feel like I'm taking someone's world away when they come in and they really love something and they can only get one glass because they want to spend it on, you know, the food or go out later. And it's also for me, when I go out, I don't want to, I mean, I end up doing it no matter what, but spending a fortune because I have to get champagne everywhere
right.
I go.
Right.
But even then we try and have champagne selections, true champagne selections that are comparable to being happy in life. Not spending too much.
I mean, that's it. If you want to have a neighborhood spot, I think you want to encourage people that they can come out and have a few glasses. And if they want to do it 3 days a week,
yeah.
You know,
you've got
to keep the price down. You're going to get their money either all at once
yep.
or you get their money over
right.
time. And
exactly.
There's certainly an appeal to getting people's money all at once and getting them the fuck out. But if you're trying to build something for the community, I think being able to get their money over time is a better approach.
Well, and from a consumer perspective, again, we chatted about this the other day, but we've chatted about this a lot over the years. You know, she does have, I swear to God, it's an eidetic memory because every time I walk in, she knows exactly what I like. I get to try something new. She remembers if I liked it or didn't. But not just the focus on the pricing and having a spectrum where people can choose to either spend a lot of money on one thing here or spend, you know, maybe the same amount of money, but taste a bunch of different things. What I like about it and where the conversation went is that there are also different wines than you're going to find anywhere else. So it's not just that you have this wonderful selection of pricing for people to choose from, because that's difficult in a neighborhood like this sometimes. You come up with the coolest stuff that I've never seen anywhere else.
Oh, I don't come up with it. I just taste and say, yeehaw. I mean, it's really cool. I don't have to really ask for anything specific. And now the people that do, and I say get to call on us because we're a fun crew here.
Yeah, you are.
They're like Kat and they know to make a calendar invite with me, but they set up an appointment and they just bring things to taste. And we don't look at pricing. Sometimes I don't even want to know where it's from. And we truly blind and deductively taste through things. But my people that are calling on me are really, I want to give them a shout out, because this has not been a case for me in the past in big corporate land. You have to reach out and ask and say, I need this in right. just this realm. And it's very limiting. So it's really a dreamy kind of space to be in.
Yeah. We get excited about finding new things and tasting new wines and discovering things that we love. And then that's the stuff that makes it on the menu. That's yeah. the stuff that
same as the food, mm-hmm. though.
It's we that's yeah, we're excited about what we do, and we like to pass that on to the guest, obviously, but it also, I think, extends to our purveyors. They see what we get excited about and then in turn come to us with stuff that they were like, well, I don't think a lot of other people are going to like this, but right. you like this
you
kind
like
of stuff.
It.
Well, that's something I really enjoy about your menu, and I don't mean to use codependency as in a bad thing, but it's not just the food relying on the wine. It's not just the wine relying on the food. There mm-hmm. really is that communication, and so yeah. You know, you've mentioned previously when you're coming up with a dish, you think about the wines that you guys have in-house, and when you are tasting wines, you're thinking about what menus you might have happening, whether it's now or a change coming or a special dinner coming up, because I know that you guys do those wine dinners and things like that. It's just, I find it really fun that it's not this huge separation between the back of the house and the front of the house and the bar program and the food program. It truly is a whole team effort.
It's a little family. We're a little family. We all love each other. We're very... I think particular about who we bring on, and we, you know, we want the vibe to be right, and we want everyone to enjoy coming to work. So mm-hmm. it's a big part of what we do is that we all love each other and we all collaborate with each other, and everyone's got a voice. So it makes yeah. it fun.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's like you've never had a job like this before. You know, a lot of people go into work with a heavy feeling, and you know, it's fun and enjoyable and rewarding here, so
that makes me so happy.
Before we have to run new brunch menu,
yes,
and we just rolled that out. I was here the other day. I had a Spanish tortilla that was excellent. The shrimp and grits were great. I love that yolk, though, it just ran perfectly into
what I'm doing
so
this weekend.
Fucking good. we had an omelet, which is cheddar and mushroom omelet, I believe. I don't have my notes in front of me, but it was solid. And then, of course, I got your other shrimp because I have to get your other shrimp.
Every time you're in.
With the garlic and the chilies.
Yeah, the garlic chili shrimp.
Every time you're in. Dish.
Every time. And there's no way I'm going to come here and not have it. And I was in here with another guy who developed a different app about Las Vegas, and I said to him, okay, we're going to do brunch, but you got to get this fucking shrimp. It's one of my favorite dish. So I made him, forced him to eat that. And he was like, oh my God, this is one of the, you're not full of shit. This is one of the best dishes ever. The char on the bread, it's all great. Oh. So brunch is new. That's mm-hmm. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday?
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, starting at noon.
Cool. And then, Kat, I know you do a Somm Sundays once a month. You invite a guest sommelier before we run. Do you want to promote the next one? Do you know who it's going to be?
I do. Big Bordeaux Bob Cranston.
Oh, everybody.
He's just a little taller than myself.
Bob and I have been doing a lot of podcasts together recently.
Yeah,
so, yes.
I'm very excited. I know I'm going to have to tell him to simmer down a few times. But
are you
going to
let him bring his guitar?
Is that possible? Yeah.
He is bringing
his
guitar.
Of course he's bringing
his
guitar.
There is one of the flights where you can request a song.
Oh, my gosh.
And when is that going to be?
That's April 2nd from 3 to 5 p.m.
And again, no ticket price on those. Just make a reservation because they do tend to fill up, right?
Yep.
Awesome. Well, guys, thanks so much, man.
I really
appreciate you having us in here today. I appreciate you taking some time to talk to us about everything that's going on. The news is next. This is Food and Loathing. It is time for the news. As I mentioned earlier, Chris Santos hosted an official grand opening party for Stanton Social Prime this week in Caesar's Palace. I had a chance to speak to him about the origin of the restaurant many years ago in NYC and how he's resurrected the brand.
I opened Stanton Social in 2004 on the Lower East Side. It was an overnight sensation, which was good because I poured not only my heart and soul, but every penny that I ever had made up until that point into it. And people really took to it. It was a share plate restaurant, all share plates, everything meant to be shared. Really became a very popular restaurant, kind of like the fabric of New York City. I never imagined we'd have a 15-year run, which in New York City is pretty big accomplishment. We had two floors there. We don't have that here, but it was really it became a fun, like intimate restaurant, but with a low key party vibe. We closed after 15 years, and we're going to reopen in New York, but the pandemic came and swept those dreams away. And I was really worried during the pandemic because I was afraid that by the time the pandemic ended, when there was no end in sight at that time, you know, how, you know, Stanton Social going to have any that name value anymore, you know? And as a project that really kind of launched my career, it's really important to me to bring it back. And so we got this opportunity to take this space over here at Caesars, and it's located directly next door to Omnia, which we own also. And so it was like a no-brainer that we were going to take the space, and within 24 hours, you know, the partnership got together and said, let's resurrect Stanton Social. But how do we make it different? And so I said, you know what? For all these, Tower Group is a giant, giant entity. We've got over 70 locations and 24 different brands, I think it is. But we don't have a single steakhouse in our portfolio. So that was where I said, you know what? I can take Stanton Social and I can reinvent it into a modern steakhouse and have it still be really fun and still mirror the experience it used to have on the Lower East Side, but bring it to Vegas. And I'll tell you one thing that's really crazy is once it was announced, like I have like 800,000 people on my fan page on Facebook or whatever, like the outpouring of love, like, oh my God, I'm so happy you're bringing Stanton Social back. Like it was staggering how many messages I got and how many messages I'm still getting. People are just so excited that the brand is back. So hopefully I did it justice with this new iteration and we'll see what happens.
People who are familiar with your food here in Las Vegas know it through Beauty in Essex. What would you tell them is the main difference, and what points of similarity are there between the two restaurants?
I would say that if you went to Beauty in Essex on a Friday night and you came here on a Saturday night, you would be able to tell that they are sister restaurants. Similar style of service, encouraging sharing all the time. I think that it's a little bit more whimsical here. It's a little bit, our menu here is a little bit more fun. Not that Beauty in Essex isn't fun, but I think we intentionally tried to inject a lot of whimsy into the menu here. Beauty in Essex, as it was in New York, you know, Stanton Social came first. When we opened Beauty in Essex, we always called Beauty in Essex like, you know, the sort of like bigger brother, a bigger sister of Stanton Social. A little bit more sophisticated, a little bit more conducive, like less party and a little bit more, you know, I don't want to say more food focused because we're food focused everywhere, but less of a party kind of place. Beauty in Essex has a high energy, but I think Stanton Social Prime is going to be a real party spot with just really great food. It's going to be great.
How does the club aspect of having Omnia next door interact with the vibe you're trying to create here?
Well, I don't know because we haven't actually opened yet. But
you got to have something in mind.
Yeah, I mean, I think that on club nights, I have to imagine, we all have to imagine that, you know, a majority of club goers are, you know, given a choice, they're going to want to eat close by. And we could literally not be closer. We literally share a door with Omnia. And I think we're the perfect complement because we, you know, Tower Group knows how to capture that, the nightlife crowd. And I would have to guess that almost all of our diners on club nights after 9 o'clock are going to be Omnia guests. And so it's going to create a really great experience for our guests where they don't have to, you know, eat at, you know, another property, you know, halfway down the strip and then come all the way here. But, you know, if they're looking for a place with a similar vibe, right? If they're looking for a quiet restaurant before dinner, well, that's not going to be us probably.
Right.
But if they're looking for like a light night, nice long night of, you know, a party atmosphere, but also with great food and wine and hospitality and all that, we're going to be that place for them.
So you've been in Las Vegas over a decade now. What have you learned about this market, about this city, and has it changed or has your opinion of it changed over that time?
I always try to force people to share my food. You know, my cookbook is called Share. It's just what I love to do when I cook at home and have people. I love to just put things in the center of the table and have everyone just kind of continue their own conversations and just celebrate whatever they're celebrating around food that's shared.
It's a little bit harder to do that here in Vegas because we get a lot of tourists who just want their steak, they want their salad, and they want their dessert, and that's it. So, you know, that's one of the challenges of our menus, because we don't build our menus that way. We build our menus to be shared, and so sometimes it can be a little bit difficult to execute when everyone wants their own thing. But at the end of the day, we're here. That applause is not for me, by the way. At the end of the day, we're here for the guests, so we give them what they want.
But with that in mind, how would you advise people to eat at Stanton Social when they come in?
The menu is broken up into a few simple sections. We have raw and rare, if that's your thing. And that could be, you know, oysters on the half shell, or it could be, you know, crudos, carpaccios. Then we have our shareables, which are our classic sharing dishes, like the French onion soup dumplings, etc. Then we've got steaks, not steaks, and hot potatoes, not potatoes. And I would just basically choose one or two from each section. And you know, we slice all the steaks, we'll slice anything you want. You know, we try to make everything as user-friendly as possible for sharing. So that's what I would suggest.
Bar and Restaurant Expo is in town early next week from March 27th through the 29th. And as you heard us mention last week, some local favorites like John Anthony from Sparrow and Wolf and the Sparrow and Wolf team and Chef Daniel Ontiveros from Carver Steak are up for Innovator Awards. Also, the International Pizza Expo runs from March 28th through March 30th. Both are at the Las Vegas Convention Center. Obviously, there are a lot of events surrounding both, some public, some private. But if you want to hang out with some of the world's best pizza makers, Slice Out Hunger is hosting a Pizza Expo tailgate party as a special welcome event to kick off Pizza Expo 2023. The event will take place on Sunday, March 26th, that is this Sunday, from 5 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. on 3rd Street in front of Pizza Rock. All attendees will receive unlimited pizza. You'll get to listen to a live DJ play some music. There'll be prizes and more for a $45 tax-deductible donation. You can donate more if you're comfortable, too. Very limited tickets are available through sliceouthunger.org. 100% of the proceeds will be donated to Slice Out Hunger.
And if you're a Golden Knights fan and a dog person and a fan of Wolfgang Puck's food,
all of the above.
I'm all three of those.
Yes.
You're going to want to head over to Wolfgang Puck's Players Locker this Sunday. I don't know. That's a long name, and I get it wrong sometimes. But you know where it is, over in downtown Summerlin.
It is.
This is also on Sunday, March 26th, between noon and 5 p.m. Shea Theodore, William Carlson, Riley Smith, Logan Thompson, Zach Whitecloud, and Alec Martinez, others from the team will be on hand with their dogs adopted through the Retriever Rescue, and they will be raising money for that rescue with an auction, raffle, and a portion of the proceeds from any food that you purchase during that time all go into the Retriever Rescue.
And don't forget about two amazing events you can participate in to help your community and spread great works with and through the culinary industry here in Las Vegas. On Saturday, April 15th, at the Palms Hotel and Casino, Chefs for Kids will be hosting its 31st annual fundraising dinner honoring the works of Chef Chris Johns. Tickets start at $250 per person, with tables for 10 starting at $2,500 and higher, including various sponsorship opportunities. There'll be both silent and live auctions, dinner, drinks, and you get to hang out with Al and I as we MC the evening. Tickets and more information are available at chefsforkids.org. And as mentioned last week, Picnic in the Alley is returning to downtown Las Vegas on Sunday, May 21st, an event curated by women for everyone, benefiting the Shade Tree Las Vegas. More information and tickets at picnicinthealley.com. And don't forget that ticket prices go up after April 1st. And if you have any questions about either one of these, find me on social media and I can help you out.
That is about it for this week. Thank you to everyone, to Jackson Stamper, to Kathleen Thomas, to James Trees, Chris Santos, Ken Heck. Thank you all for being part of this podcast. And please tell a friend about the Food and Loathing podcast, which is available on all the usual podcast places, but you know that because you found it. You can check out my musings and postings on the social media sites, and you can just search for Food and Loathing or Food and Loathing podcast. And you can reach us directly by email, info@foodandloathing.vegas.
And if you haven't done it yet, and why not, my weekly reminder, download the Neon Feast app and use it to find your next dining destination. Whatever you need, whatever you want, you'll find it on the Neon Feast app and neonfeast.com. If you want to see Al on TV, you have to see the new colors of his mohawk. His weekly appearance on Wake Up with the CW will now occur every Friday around 8:30 a.m.
You can also catch him all week long on the Neon Feast update on The Vibe.
99.7, is that what you were going
That's
for there?
That's the one here in Las Vegas, 98.1 in the high desert, and 98.9 at the river, and every Thursday morning around 8:10 a.m. on the club at AM 670 KMZQ.
How do I find time to do this podcast?
I don't know where you find the time. Oh, my gosh. Well, and if you want to know what I'm up to, you want to talk about butterboards since it came up today. You want to know what I'm cooking with all that stuff I bought at the Asian market. Just find me at Wishbone and Vine.
With Samantha Gemini Stevens, I am Al Mancini. Wow, that was an interesting thing. You notice I just kicked the table and there was a little like AC/DC Hell's Bells
right?
going on there.
Sound effects.
You can leave that in there, Rich, if you like, or you can take it out. Anyway, with Samantha Gemini Stevens and on behalf of all of our friends who hosted us here at Ada's today, I'm Al Mancini. Stay hungry.